let me ask you, what do you feel is the most important? Is it content? Is it context? Is it timing? Or is it number of times that messaging is seen? Like, what do you believe people need to make? Where does the shift need to happen?
This is the Platform Marketing Show, where we interview the most creative and ambitious real estate agents in the country, dissect their local marketing strategy, and get the behind-the-scenes scoop on how they're generating listing leads and warm referrals. We'll dive into the specifics of what marketing campaigns are working for them, how much they're spending on those campaigns, and figure out how they have perfected what we call the platform marketing strategy. This is your host, Tim Shermack. I'm the founder and CEO of Platform. I love marketing and I talk too much. So let's dive in. Hey guys, it's Tim Shermack and welcome back to another episode of the Platform Marketing Show. I'm joined this morning by Brandon Smith from Missoula, Montana. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Tim, thanks so much, man. So good to be here. Excited for this.
Yeah. So to give you guys some quick context, some quick intro here, I'm actually going to let Brandon do probably 99% of the talking on this particular episode, because what we're doing with this one, it's a little bit different than the normal platform marketing podcast episodes, where rather than me interviewing Brandon about, you know, his real estate journey or his marketing strategies, we're actually going to do a callback to a platform mastermind keynote that Brandon gave 2 years ago at the annual Platform Marketing Mastermind conference. And it was one of the highest rated keynotes from our attendees, I think, that we've ever had, even actually years later. The reason that I scheduled this interview with Brandon is that a bunch of our clients actually posted in our Facebook group requesting, hey, is there a recording I can watch of that keynote from 2 years ago? I'm still having ideas and inspiration from that keynote literally 2 years ago. And they were asking for a recording. And I said, well, we don't actually have a recording of that talk, but what I could do is interview Brandon on the Platform Marketing Show, and he can kind of reshare that keynote for those who weren't at the actual Platform Mastermind. So that's what we're going to be doing this morning. Brandon is going to share what I think is one of the best, most tactical, practical presentations in the history of the Platform Masterminds. One of the things I think is so cool, without stealing Brandon's thunder here, is that he found a creative way as a local business owner. So he runs a independent insurance agency in Montana and throughout the West. I know he's licensed in a bunch of states. It's not just Montana, but he found a really creative, thoughtful, personalized way to sponsor youth sports teams and actually use that to drive business. So it's not just an act of charity of, oh, I gave him $500 and they slapped our logo on their jerseys and we called it a day. He actually got to know the kids and the parents and just did all these little things that cumulatively added up to where the parents and, you know, people remembered his insurance agency and it actually drove business. He tracked everything about how much business came in as a result of the sponsorship. So I hope people listening to this, it kind of starts to turn the gears of like, how can I take what looks like a boring, old school, ineffective, you know, local marketing strategy, like sponsoring a baseball team or sponsoring a softball team, whatever, soccer team, you know, how can I take something like that and do it differently so that it actually makes an impact, you know, both on the sports team as well as in your business. So Brandon, without further ado, welcome again to the Platform Marketing Show. Take it away.
Awesome, Tim. Thank you. You know, before I dive in and share these couple stories with you, I want to create some framework or guidelines inside which we're operating in and where I'm coming from, what the train of thought was in these, I guess, marketing strategies that turned into be life-changing, innovative for us, where now I have the opportunity to travel. And I share these stories, share this keynote over and over. And in fact, in the last 2 years, it's evolved. We've pivoted. We've changed some things. We've learned some things. We've gotten better at some things. And so if I were to put a title on this, like if this was a book with different chapters I'm about to share with you, I would title this book Different, A Different Approach to Business Relationships. And I think a lot of times in life, when we hear the word different, we have one of two responses to it. Some of us, we hear different and we think, ooh, scary, change, uncertainty, unpredictability. I don't like that. I like to know exactly what today is going to look like and this is how I live life, and these are the guidelines I am going to move forward inside of. And then we have the other half of the room where we hear that we're different, and we're like, yes, change, opportunity, unpredictability, a journey. We like to go back to our home or to our offices and rearrange the furniture because it feels good. There's something fresh and exciting about that. We don't like to be in the same place twice. But the one thing we can all agree on, regardless of what side of the aisle we're on, is we can come together and agree that different means no longer the same. Something has changed. And you, as a part of the Platform Marketing Network, you're listening to this podcast because you want something different. You want to grow. You want to change. You don't want tomorrow to look like yesterday. You want to be different. And I believe different in business starts with creating wow moments. If you want to get someone's attention, if you want to get repeat customers, you want to wow them. You want to do something that literally blows their mind, where they have such a great experience that they are going and telling the story to others. For instance, for me, I remember one time at Disney World, I love the quote from Walt Disney that says, do what you do so well that you can't help but go home and tell your friends and family. I was at Disney World a couple of years ago on a big family trip. We were getting ready to watch the show on the castle and the fireworks. It was hot. Kids were tired. We were hungry. So I decided, hey, I'm going to run to Casey's Corner. I'm going to grab some food, some drinks, bring them back to the family. We're just going to have a last night here in the park and just chill on Main Street. I walk into Casey's Corner, and I know you all know exactly where that is. You picture this. Go there with me. You walk into those double doors of Casey's Corner, and you look up on that reader board, and you see burgers, fries, Diet Coke, Coke, Sprite. And then on the very bottom, I saw baseball brownies. Now, I didn't really know what that was, but I caught on the back counter this tray of brownies with white frosting with two red stripes on them in the shape of a baseball. So I ordered some drinks and food for the family, and in fact, I ordered one baseball brownie. Well, on my way back to the family, my hands were full. I realized I have one brownie. I've got five in my immediate family, and there's like 20 of us there with aunts, uncles, cousins. So I quickly eat that brownie. I want to get rid of all evidence that I had a treat while I was away.
Smart.
And I'm not joking. That brownie, the most incredible thing I've ever tasted. The density of the cake, the frosting was the perfect sweetness, the ratio of frosting to cake, like amazing. Like, I don't know what kind of like sorcery magic Mickey's doing back in the kitchen, but the brownie was phenomenal. So I get to my family, we eat our food, we watch the show, life goes on. Two nights later, we're back home in Montana, getting ready for bed, and I say to my wife, I said, hey, I need to come clean with something. I've been carrying some guilt for the last couple of days.
Some shame. You know?
And she's like, oh no, what happened? And I said, well, remember the night at the fireworks, Main Street, Casey's Corner, food, hungry kids, that whole event? She goes, yeah. And I said, well, at Casey's Corner, I got this brownie and I ate it, and it's the best thing I've ever tasted. It's far superior to any other dessert I've ever had. And just the fact that I had that and didn't share that with you, I've been carrying some guilt because it was so good. Well, we fast forward a year and a half later. I happened to be in Florida again with my daughter and my wife. She's planned the perfect day for us. We're going to Magic Kingdom. And this day is all about my daughter, Avery. Avery gets to pick where we eat, what rides we go on, where we shop, what we do. It's one-on-one time with parents and Avery. We walk in the main gate. I look at Avery and I say, Avery, where are we going? What are we doing today? And she goes, well, the first stop is we got to go to Casey's Corner and get you that brownie. Otherwise, I'm going to hear about it all day. And so sure enough, we go straight. The rope drops. We go straight to Casey's Corner. Everyone else is rushing to the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train.
Let's say, you're not going to the Mine Train. You're not going to Space Mountain. You're going to Casey's Corner.
Casey's Corner.
We're here at Rope Drop.
Very first people to walk through the door that morning. I walk in. And I see that reader board, and I see hamburgers, hot dogs, Coke, Diet Coke, Sprite, Boston cream pie. And everything inside of me, I look at my wife and I go, we took out a second mortgage for this? Like, we came to Disney World, and there is no baseball brownie. So one of the ladies behind the counter, she goes, hey, you know, good morning, can I help you? And I said, oh, no, I was here a year ago, and you had these brownies. They're like baseball brownies, and so good. We loved them. Wanted to come and get those again. And she goes, oh, I apologize. Those are seasonal. We do have really good Boston cream pie right now. Can I interest you in that? And I said, no, we're all right. Thank you. So we walk out of Casey's Corner. We're on Main Street. We're almost to the Walt and Mickey statue. The conversation with Avery is like, where are we going now? What do you want to do? Is it Space Mountain? Where are we going, Eve? And I get this tap on my shoulder and I turn around and it's the lady from Casey's Corner. And she goes, excuse me, sir. The chef wanted me to give you this. And she hands me on a plate a baseball brownie. In that moment, I pulled out my phone. I took a picture of it.
Brandon, did you cry?
I did not cry. But the emotion inside of me was, this is a wow moment. Like, I took the picture and I said to my wife and daughter, I said, this is a story I will tell forever. There's so much great business, educational wow moments in this that we can take and learn. Like, I do not know how Disney did that.
So I can actually interject here as a, I actually should have brought my name tag because I kept my name tag. I used to work at Walt Disney World. I went through the traditions training as a cast member and everything. I worked there. And what happened there is actually a very orchestrated, they call it a magic moment. Maybe they've changed the terminology since I worked there, but back when I was there, it was called a magic moment. And even as a minimum wage employee, as a cast member there making, you know, $10 an hour or whatever, you are empowered to do little things like that if you think it will create a so-called magic moment with a guest. Because even everyone down to the showkeepers at Disney World, the showkeepers are what they call the janitors. So even as a janitor, you're not a custodian or a janitor, you're called a showkeeper because you're keeping the show looking clean. They are empowered and they go through the guest service training where they actually teach the economics of how the business model of Disney World works. And we were taught as minimum wage employees that, hey, the average family who's coming here will spend over $5,000 on this vacation. And the average family has been saving for this vacation for somewhere between 3 and 4 years. And the average family over their lifetime with Disney has a lifetime value of well over $20,000. And so they teach this to minimum wage employees so that they understand we don't really care if you have to give away, in this case, a brownie, right? Or a classic example they always used in training is if someone buys an ice cream cone and they dump the ice cream, you know, they hand it to their 5-year-old and he dumps the ice cream cone all over his shirt. You are empowered, even as a minimum wage cast member, to go over to that kid, walk him over to the nearest merchandise stand, get him a brand new shirt for free, and just you tell the employee there, hey, we're comping this. I'll handle the details later. Get the kid a brand new Disney shirt and then also replace the ice cream cone for free. Because yeah, that might cost the company $20 or whatever, but those parents will tell that story for the rest of their lives. Yeah. And obviously Disney makes a lot of money on that.
Exactly. And that's what Walt meant when he said, do what you do so well, they want to see it again and bring their family.
Yep.
Because here we are in 2024, and I am telling you the story about a brownie. The truth is that brownie is probably not the best brownie, not the healthiest brownie, but it was an experience. And I promise you this, platform, next time you are at Walt Disney World, walking down Main Street and see Casey's Corner, because of this podcast, you will thank Brownie. Casey's Corner, amazing. I need to have one.
And it wasn't
Disney
even...
Disney is the one who capitalizes off the wow moment.
Yep, it wasn't even a Colorado brownie. It was just a normal, pedestrian Florida brownie. No psychoactive effects whatsoever. Just a normal brownie.
It was amazing. And I realized in that moment, like, this is how we need to operate a business. This is how we need to treat our clients, our prospects, those people we want to be in front of. This is how you do it. And I realized that day that the difference between a contact and a contract, the difference between a shopper and a buyer, the difference between somebody who thinks they want to do business with you and actually does business with you, the difference between a contact and a contract is one simple letter. It's the letter R. And that R, I believe, is relationships. Because when you have a vested relationship in somebody, their heart follows. And when you have their heart, their wallet follows. And the referrals and the retention and the loyalty and the repeat service, And I found it is so much easier to do business with your friends, because those hard conversations are never fun, but they're easier. For me to call up Tim and say, Tim, hey, I just talked to the appraiser, some bad news, A, B, and C, or looking at, you know, the survey of the flood zone, like the bad news. We can provide solutions. We can talk that through with Tim. But if I don't know Tim and have no relationship, there's a high probability of anger, frustration, hanging up the phone, bad review on Yelp, Google, because they had a negative experience. The difference between a contact and a contract is that letter R, it's a relationship. And I could spend all day telling you about all the big Fortune 500 companies that have figured that out. One, for example, is Netflix. Netflix did not kill Blockbuster. Blockbuster killed themselves by having ridiculous late fees and not access to the newest title or the movie you wanted to watch on a Friday night. Yes, Netflix used technology, but Netflix figured out that the greatest disruptor to their business was not being customer-centric. They just happened to use technology to enhance the relationship. Uber didn't kill the taxi industry. Ridiculous fees and not having access to a vehicle is what killed the taxi industry. Apple didn't kill the music industry. iTunes came out and said, hey, you no longer need to buy the full Nickelback album. You can just buy the one song. Like it was about the customer. It was the relationship. The difference between a contact and a contract is the letter R. It's a relationship. And so I took the wow moments. I took the relationship piece, put those together, and had an opportunity to coach a Little League baseball team. I was driving to my office one morning, Tim, and I got a text message from the president of the local Little League Association that said, good morning, Brandon. I am pumped to see your son, Boston, is registered for Little League this season. Quick question for you. Would you have any interest in coaching a team this year? Like most parents, my immediate response was absolutely not. Not at all. But in that moment, I realized, wait, if I coach the team, I have a little bit of control. I could control the practice schedule, the length of practice, whether or not practice gets canceled due to bad weather. Like, that's my call. So I texted him back and said, his name was Nick Davis. I said, Nick, absolutely. I'd be honored to coach. I can make that happen. Moments later, he responded with, second question. Now that you're coaching, would you have any interest in your business sponsoring a team? And I thought, you sucker, it was a setup. That is really what you're
now. So, I mean, obviously you can't say no now.
Right. So I texted him back and I said, can you email me the details? I'll get back to you later today.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get to my office and I have an email from Nick that says, team sponsorship is $500. It gets you your name printed on the hats and your logo in our opening day media guide. And I realized it's not so much a sponsorship. It's a generous donation to community service is sure. Really what it is. Just helping underwrite some of the costs of Little League. So when I'm traveling and speaking to him, I love to ask the question right here because I don't know how many times I've done this, but the response is 100% the same. I ask the audience, quick show of hands, how many of you have ever sponsored a youth sports program, whether it be YMCA soccer to Little League to a swim team? Nearly every hand in the audience goes up. My follow-up question is, how many of you have ever called the phone number on the back of a YMCA soccer jersey to do business with them? Not one hand has ever gone up. So as I sat there in my office that day, you know, I'm a sports fan, I'm coaching a team, I'm also a competitive businessman, entrepreneur. I wanted to figure out how to make this $500 not just a donation, but an investment. How could we actually get a positive ROI on a $500 youth sponsorship? So here's what we did. Here's the story. I call it Field of Dreams. I steal from one of the greatest baseball movies of all time because I had this dream with this team we were fielding. So Little League Baseball, 9 to 12-year-old kids, they have their first tryout. I go to the tryout, and I'm standing there watching kids trying to judge their ability to run, throw, swing a bat, catch a ball. And as I'm standing there watching them, I say to the guy who's my assistant coach, I said, you know, the truth is, not one of these kids is going to play for the Yankees, Red Sox, or Dodgers tomorrow. Statistically, never. They're just young boys. what if we draft the kids? And remember, I'm in the insurance space. I said, what if we draft the kids who get out of the nicest vehicles? What if we draft the kids whose parents have the name of a business on the side of their vehicles where there's opportunity to build a relationship? I remember a truck pulling in, it had the name of a restoration company on the side. And I thought, we got to draft that kid. There's an opportunity for an amazing business relationship there. So a couple nights later, we go to the draft. We draft our team. We take some good baseball players. We take some weak baseball players. It's just kind of the essence of youth sports with 9 to 12-year-old boys. But Tim, I know your daughter, I know Rosie isn't quite there yet, but what happens is with youth sports is you sign your kid up for a team. And this happens over and over. You'll get a random text message on a Thursday night at 8:26 p.m. that says, good evening, Tim. My name is Brandon Smith. I have the opportunity to coach your daughter in soccer this year. Our first practice will be Monday at 6 o'clock. See you there. And it's this group message that goes out that gets a couple questions from, you know, the type A parents who need to know the exact details, night one. And then you'll get some reactions, thumbs up, exclamation points from parents and just the notifications. And it doesn't make for a great experience. It's predictable. It's what all youth coaches do. So I had the idea of, let's send the kids a draft letter. And I wanted to send them a letter where the kids felt important, create some anticipation for the upcoming season, wanted the kids to feel valued. Truthfully, I wanted to do something different. I wanted an experience that was different than any other experience they've ever had before. So what we did was we sent a draft letter to the kids in the mail on our business letterhead. We did not hide who we are, what we were doing, what products we sold, what we could help them with. But we sent a letter that, you know, in a minute here, and I think we're going to be able to share some of these sleeps. You know, if you're watching on YouTube, see some of these, and I can get you this draft letter. But essentially the draft letter, to paraphrase, said, you know, congratulations, Blake. You've been drafted to play baseball this season by Glidewell Insurance. We're excited to have you on the team. Can you do us a favor? Let your parents know about our parents meeting this day, this time. Love to have one of them there. Look forward to seeing you next Monday night, field 2, 6 o'clock. Sent that out. Waited 72 hours. Then I sent the mass email out to all the parents. And my opening line in the email was, good afternoon. Hopefully by now your son has received the first draft letter of his baseball career. Then essentially just recapped what the letter said, reminded them about the parents' meeting, looking forward to seeing them. I got 3 or 4 email responses that night that had nothing to do with baseball. I got email responses that said, Brandon, the draft letter was genius. I can't begin to tell you the impact that had on my son. He has it hanging on the corkboard in his bedroom. I had a parent say, your letter is sitting on the mantle in our living room. My son called his grandparents and told them he got drafted. And it was in that moment I realized, Tim, that if we wow the kids, we wow the parents. That's really deep. If we wow the kids, we wow the parents. So I realized, again, in that moment, I need to continue wowing the kids. As the season progresses, this isn't about baseball. It's about creating wow moments for 9 to 12-year-old boys. Because the difference between a contact and a contract is a relationship, and it starts with those boys. So rather than taking the hats the league provided, I went out to Branded Bills, and I got some custom hats made. Like, I didn't want just the cheap, cheesy foam hats the league provided. We went out and got some wool hats made, high quality. Granted, they still said Glidewell Investments Insurance on the front. Not the funnest, most attractive baseball hat. But it was different. It was different than all the other teams. It made the kids feel valued. They were special. They were chosen. They were selected to be on this team, and we're having a better experience.
You know, I actually
the players and the coaches. Oh, go ahead. Yeah,
I said I actually can think back to when I was playing traveling baseball as a kid, and a lot of like the, you know, the best regional teams had a sponsor. My dad owned an RV dealership when we were growing up, and he sponsored our baseball team, I think the year I was in fourth grade. And so he called it the Coachman, because that was the brand of RV that he sold at his dealership. Was he sold Coachman, travel trailers and motorhomes. And so just the name of our team was the Coachman, and the logo for our team was just the corporate Coachman logo. And we thought it, like, but the point I'm making is, as like 10-year-olds, we thought it was cool that we had a sponsor. We could care less what the sponsor was, but like having a sponsor inherently to a kid is cool because it signals that this is a legitimate team with a sponsor. There was a team in our area that was sponsored by the local Taco John's. And if you're not from the Midwest or the Western part of the country, I think Taco John's originated in Wyoming actually, but I live in Florida now.
We don't West Mex.
Yeah. Like we don't have Taco John's in Florida, and it's devastating to me because I grew up with Taco John's and I love it. It's vastly superior to Taco Bell in every way. Anyways, there was a local baseball team sponsored by the local Taco John's restaurant, and they were called the Taco Bravos. That was the name of their team, and it was in like the font of Taco John's. So it's like hilarious in hindsight that businesses were so like forward and so brazen in how they sponsored. But as a kid, you thought that was cool. It's like, wow, our team is sponsored. You know, like they think that's cool. So don't shy away from putting your logo on stuff, whether it's on the jersey, the hat, or you mentioned the draft letter had your insurance agency's a letterhead. Like, you don't have to hide it, because I think the more that kids feel like I'm part of a legitimate team that actually has a sponsor, they think that's actually cool.
Right. You know, and we spent $125 on hats. Like, it wasn't a huge investment. So like, I'm $625 in now with the sponsorship and the hats. And where I've seen this presentation change from even when I shared it at Platform a couple of years ago is I've had people reach out to me and share how they've taken it and improved. I know a guy in the Midwest who sponsored a team, and his draft letter came in a box, and inside the box was the team hat, was a brand new baseball, three packages of baseball cards, a package of sunflower seeds, and a bunch of bubble gum, and created these moments for kids that was like, they go to school and they talk about this. They are telling their friends, like, look where I'm at. Look what team chose me. And I think that's brilliant, because again, you wow the kids, you wow the parents. And so I kind of set the bar high early on, and we had to figure out through the season, how do we continue to create wow moments for the kids? So for me, one of the areas was practice. I wanted practice each day to really become the highlight of the day for the kids. As I got to know the boys, there was a boy on our team at one point where his dad had, like, I believe, stage 4 pancreatic cancer and just had days to live. Baseball and being on the field was an outlet for him. It was a safe place. It was a place where he could be real and let his emotions out. We had kids whose parents were walking through a divorce. We had kids that had learning disabilities and dyslexia at school. Like, these kids don't all just have this easy life. They're not just going through the emotions. They have challenges that they're facing. And so I recall one practice where we sat out in, like, right center field for an hour and a half. We didn't touch a baseball, swing a bat, pick up our gloves. We just had conversation. I asked the boys questions like, what was the best part of your day? What didn't you like about school today? What do you like the most about your parents? What don't you like about your little sister? What's your favorite Fortnite dance? Stand up, show me your dance. Let's have a dance competition. And just invested in the boys on a deeper relational level. Now, remember, I'm no hero here coaching the team or expert in, like, raising youth or young men. I'm trying to control the schedule. That's why I signed up to coach, and I'm competitive because I have a $500 investment. But as this happened, I started realizing the wow moments, and that the difference between that contact and contract is a relationship. That night, I got a text message from one of the dads on the team that said, "Hey, my son came home and said tonight was the best practice ever. Don't know what you did. He wasn't a huge fan of baseball, but he's actually loving being a part of the team." I don't know if his son told him we didn't play baseball, we didn't run, we didn't work out. We just hung out as a group of boys. I would put, I would change up drills. I put all the boys in a line at second base with a 5-gallon bucket at home plate and give them a baseball and tell them, "Hey, if you make the baseball in the bucket, I will give you a $20 bill. The kids never made it in the bucket all season, but they were getting closer and closer, and they were focused on where they were throwing the ball, which made an impact and made a difference in the game. So just made practice fun. Wanted to value the boys, build their self-esteem. I would put cards in the mail to the boys. Again, with our agency logo on it, my name, the return address on the envelope was from our business. But I'd put cards in the mail that just said something on the lines of, "Hey, you know, Carter, great practice last night. I'm so impressed with your hustle. Thank you for being a leader. Keep it up," with a $5 gift card to Dairy Queen. The cool part was Carter, the next night at practice, he would do two things. He would continue to hustle and he was a leader. It was like, I found that I am reinforcing the positive behavior and elements of a baseball team. And again, none of these kids are going to the pros, but they had a coach that believed in them. They had assistant coaches that believed in them. We were building their self-esteem. And these boys who started off struggling began winning games, began getting some momentum going on the field. I put cards in the mail, the same card, from my office to the parents on the team. You know, I'd say things like, Joe and Stephanie, thank you for allowing me to coach your son, Will. It's been an honor getting to know you and your family this week. See you at the game Thursday night. Just another touch point of a relationship, because I know no other youth sports coach is doing that with their team. As the team began to grow and blossom, we took it to social media. I wanted on social media to have a platform where we're highlighting the kids. I found it really important to be able to tag parents so they can see and engage and share the content with aunts, uncles, grandparents. I found that it's very important to make your posts shareable. But I wanted to create a fan base. And so I did that I started off by posting a picture of my son on my personal platforms and just said something on the lines of, you know, my favorite team will be wherever Boston Smith plays. And used some hashtags, emojis, wanted to show that I was cool, hip, trendy. Tagged my son on that. My next post, I believe, was a picture of me with all the boys, kind of a team huddle, where I just said, love these boys. And I used some hashtags, just from the funny sayings from a team or some of the nicknames we had for the boys. And then that particular post, my business came in and liked that post. My business commented on that post, shared that post, engaged with that post, and slowly transitioned all the social content away from me, but to the business platform. Now, I don't know what it's like in the real estate industry, but I can tell you in the insurance industry, people don't like, don't care, and don't engage with the insurance jargon. They don't care about rates, how to mitigate claims. They want authentic relationships with the people they trust the most. And so we got away from all insurance social media and spent 3 months of just highlighting a baseball team. I remember going online after our game and going to ESPN and looking at like the paragraph Buster Olney would write after a game where it said, you know, despite the weather delay, the Pirates, you know, starting pitcher struck out four and so, just the three or four sentences. I would copy and paste that, go in and edit the names, details, numbers, stats, and create a post. And I would do that consistently after every game. And what I saw was parents begin to like our business Facebook page. They would share our posts to their followers, to their fans.
Yeah, because it would
see grandparents, similar last names, like, engage, share, begin following our business page.
Because it was worded in such a way where it sounded like they were reading actual, you know, ESPN sports journalism when you would post these stories. Like it would say, you know, Boston Smith led the team with a 3-for-4 hitting, including,
well, you know. I have one right here. I can read it to you. Colton Riley at 4 strikeouts and 2 innings of relief. Boston Smith had a hashtag SportsCenter top 10 barehanded grab for a timely out. In the end, Glidewell defeated a solid Butte team 14-1. That post there, I showed the boys at practice the next day. Because of the hashtag, SportsCenter liked our post. Now the boys,
really?
They've arrived.
That's
SportsCenter
cool.
Knows who they are. SportsCenter likes them. The next post was the streak continues. Glidewell has won 7 in a row. Glidewell won 13-0 thanks to a phenomenal pitching performance by Taco, who was a nickname for Brock on our team, and Brooks Earhart going 4-for-4 with 6 RBIs. These sort of things began to traction. People liked it. Like all of a sudden we had a fan base. People whose kids weren't even on the team, but were following our Facebook page, were liking, commenting, cheering us on, go blue, good luck, go get them. It was like we had now in Missoula, Montana, a professional sports team. Oh, and then this cool thing happened in 2021, 2022. ChatGPT hits the interwebs. And I was able to take the stats that were kept in an app, copy, paste into ChatGPT and say, hey, write an article about last night's game. And my one paragraph turned into four or five paragraphs where we're highlighting more kids, more stats, more details, more pictures that expand in the engagement. Because rather than just the one or two kids getting mentioned in our paragraph, we're getting four or five kids mentioned. What's that do for kids? It wows the kids. It wows the parents. Creates more engagement. It was amazing, Tim. I started seeing pictures on Facebook of parents posting a picture of their kid talking about how much they love the baseball season, where the kid's at home sitting there doing his homework wearing a hat that says Glidewell Insurance.
Yeah.
Like, I guarantee you that kid had cooler hats at home, but he began taking pride in that hat and that team.
Yeah, because that actually means something. It actually means something.
It has worth. It has value to them that they would have sold that hat for $100, that they were a part of something bigger than themselves and they mattered. Tim, you and I, we're from the generation where not every kid gets a trophy. I, however, at the end of the season, had an award ceremony where I gave every kid a trophy with my name and logo on it. I am a fan of that. So we made up names. We made up awards for each kid. We had the Barry Bonds Award. That went to the kid who did the most drugs on our team. We had, I'm just kidding, went to the kid who had the most walks on our team. We had the Shohei Ohtani Award, the Cy Young Award, the Ricky Henderson Award. We had one kid on our team, not good at baseball, but he needed an award. And I remember during the season, he was away for like a week and a half because he went on a missions trip with his family. So he got the Roberto Clemente Award.
All right.
I was standing citizen. At the awards dinner, rather than giving each kid a handwritten note, I gave them a handwritten note written on a baseball.
Yeah.
Wrote awesome. The note on the baseball, gave it to them, hoping that, hey, this trophy, this baseball, they're going to sit up on that mantle by the draft later. They're going to hold on to this. And these 12-year-old boys in the next 3 to 4 years are getting their driver's license. Their parents are going to be shocked by the rate increase. They're going to need to call somebody. And I knew that the difference between that contact and the contract was a relationship. And we started that relationship on the baseball field.
What I think is so interesting about how you structured that experience is that, you know, from the outside looking in, it's like, well, none of these kids, if they're, you know, 10 years old, whatever, 11 years old, like none of these kids are potential customers because they're not buying insurance when they're in middle school. You know, their parents are. Frankly, if you asked every kid on the team, what does Glidewell Insurance do? They probably actually couldn't even give an answer of, I don't even know what an insurance company Zero does. Clue. You know?
Zero clue. You know, I remember back when I played baseball, when you had like a big hit or a home run, coach would grab the ball and keep it and give it to you, and you got the home run ball.
Right.
We had a kid on our team, Brooks Earhart. He hit his first home run. I had somebody go out to left field, grab the ball, give it to me. After the game, I wrote on it, first home run in the date. And I think a lot of coaches would have done that. I think a lot of coaches would have just given it to Brooks and called it a night. Well, I said, you know, the day and age we live in, I had my cell phone in my back pocket. I said, Brooks, let me get a picture of you with that baseball. I took a picture of him. And again, I think it ends right there for a lot of people. Well, what I did was I went and got that picture printed in a 5x7. I framed it. And at the awards banquet, I gave that framed picture to Brooks. And I wrote on the actual picture of the Sharpie, Brooks, congrats on a great season. I'm honored to be your coach. Have a great summer, Brandon. And gave it to him. For me, that's where it ended. But what happened was Saturday morning, I woke up and Brooks's mom posted a picture on Facebook of her and Brooks with Brooks holding the framed picture, tagging myself, Glidewell, the other coaches, thanking us for a great season. What an amazing experience it was. She did not talk about the wins, the losses, the score. She talked about the experience. I saw pictures of kids on our team at vacation on Banff. They're Lake Louise, standing in the water wearing a hat that says Glidewell Insurance. Like, blew my mind. Like, that's not what the goal was. The goal was I wanted to control the calendar and earn $500 back. So here's the end of the story, Tim. I was about $1,100 invested between the sponsorship, the hats, the Dairy Queen gift cards, the trophies, the baseballs, the Gatorades, the sunflower seats. But within 60 days of the season being completed, I had generated $11,863 in first-year revenue commission from the baseball team. Now, very different than the real estate world. I know you got people listening right now and be like, ooh, $11,000. Like, that's like a shanty that we'd sell in the Midwest. Like, no. Let me help you understand. In our industry, that is an annual residual income. Every year those policies renew, we get that. And we all know that our insurance rates increase. So the longer we retain it, the more revenue we make year over year over year. So in the insurance space, to generate $12,000 in first year revenue without ever having to ask anybody to quote their insurance or have a conversation is mind blowing. It is huge. If we were at an insurance event and I was sharing this, there'd probably be a bit of an applause, standing ovation, or picking up their chin from the floor because that's shocking. Yep. But here's how it happened. I did not ask anybody. I did not ask one person to review their insurance. I simply invested in kids, created wow moments, and built relationships. There, I think it was a Tuesday night, I got a text message from one of the dads on our team that said, hey, Brandon, great game tonight. Not sure what your schedule looks like tomorrow. Any chance you could meet up for lunch? I panicked. I thought, oh no, what did I do? What did I say? How did I touch his son? Did I grab, like, everybody's being canceled right now. Society is going woke. Like, what did I do? I wrestled going to sleep that night. The next morning, I go and I meet him at 11 o'clock for lunch. I walk in and I sit down in this deli with him. And he just starts with this, how's the baseball season going? It's quite the game last night. A lot of small talk. How are you? How are the kids? And internally, I'm like, why are we here? What's about to happen? Like, so I finally just stop it. And I say, hey, question for you. Why are we here? Like, what's your goal? What are you trying to get out of this? And he goes, oh, well, honestly, he goes, between Monday and Tuesday, he goes, just at my office, we had a falling out with our insurance company and found out some what we thought was going to be a covered claim isn't covered. And we're not real happy with our rates with our group health insurance for our employees. And so last night, I'm kind of venting to my wife during the game. And she says, well, you should talk to Coach Brandon. He can help you with that. So I got on your website in the stands last night, and I saw some things I wanted to talk to you about. And so after the game, that's why I texted about getting together. And we began this conversation. And Tim, this guy owned or was a operator of a John Deere dealership where we had the opportunity to insure their business owner's policy, their liability, their property, their group health insurance, their retirement plan for their employees. Of that 12,000, almost 8,000 of that revenue came from him. Everyone else was just home and auto policies. All of that happened purely because of a vested interest into people. And I think so many times people, especially in our industry, they make their priority policies, premiums, procedures, profits, all those P words. And the truth is, people should be the priority. When you focus on people, build a relationship, you know, in the from the field of dreams, if you build it, they will come. You know, people listening to this podcast right now, you may be like, well, really cool story, Brandon. I'm inspired, but I don't have kids in Little League. But you may have a daughter in choir. You may have a son in orchestra or drama or the swim team. There is opportunity every day to take the things we've always done and do them a little bit different. How we have to make that shift. Yep. I've heard stories from realtors being at their kid's school play, and on the way out, they see a 12-year-old boy hold the door and hold it for an elderly couple as they walk out. That realtor put a note card in the mail to that kid saying, Johnny, last night at your play, you phenomenal performance. On the way out, I happened to observe you holding the door for Mr. and Mrs. Robinson as they went out. We need more chivalry in today's society. Keep loving the older generation. I'm proud of you. He sent that card. 48 hours later, he got a phone call from Johnny's dad saying, did you really see Johnny do that? Thank you for the card. We've been struggling with him and just honoring others. I'm really proud of him if he did that. I want to recognize that. It started a brand new relationship. And 9 months later, guess who got the listing for the sale of Johnny's house? The realtor who sent the card. You can sponsor lunches, for the youth sports team before they get on, or the swim team before they get on the boat and head to a swim meet, or get on the boat,
yep.
get on the bus for the swim meet. There's so many opportunity of things that we do all the time just to pivot, just do it different. And the coolest part was, it wasn't the $12,000 in revenue. The coolest part was we built a community that believed in little boys, 9 to 12 year old boys. And if they would have just won one more baseball game, those boys would have been off to the call or the Little League World Series. These kids grew. They thrived. They created a culture, a community. These kids are now, some of them are stepping into high school in the next couple of years playing baseball at a very elite level. And I do not believe it's because Brandon Smith is a phenomenal baseball coach. Yes, we had success, but I believe that success came because we understood from day one the power of wow moments and that the difference between a contact and a contract is that letter R. It's relationships. And so I truly, truly believe if you build it, they will come. You build the relationships, the sales opportunities will come. You invest in people, the revenue and profits, they will come. I think here, there's some things I would love to give you. Find me on Instagram. Find me on Instagram. Brandon Smith, pretty easy to find. Shoot me a message on there. I'll send you the draft letter. I will send you some of the verbiage of the things we did so that you can take that, copy, paste, plagiarize, make it your own, and make an impact in your community. So, Tim, that's story one of just really how Wild Moments changed how I view youth sports, youth sponsorship, and really finding it as work. I didn't view my time away from the office on the baseball field as work is over, not to go coach baseball. It was one and the same. I was investing in people and choosing to love them, value them, speak into their lives, and business took care of itself.
You know, from a social media marketing perspective, that's obviously what we do at, you know, a platform. So I'm kind of perceiving this story from a marketing perspective, right? And I think the thing that just jumps out to me so much is that you are really proving what we've said, you know, all along, that you can't substitute budget for creativity. So like if you want your social media posts and your social media presence as a local business, whether you're a restaurant, an insurance agency, or obviously a real estate agent, if you want your social media game to get a lot of engagement, you have to actually post interesting things. Just throwing more money at sponsored ads and retargeting ads, if you're just promoting stuff that isn't that interesting, is boring, but you're putting a lot of money behind it, that's not really a winning recipe, right? It's so much easier to actually do interesting things in real life. Do remarkable things, you know, like the definition of the word remarkable is worth remarking about, right? Something that's so creative, so, as you say, so different, so interesting, well, that people would actually talk about it.
Let me ask you, what do you feel is the most important? Is it content? Is it context? Is it timing? Or is it number of times that messaging is seen? Like, what do you believe people need to make? Where does the shift need to happen?
I mean, I think all of those things are part of the mix, but what makes a great ad or a great social media post versus just one that's good, right?
Are you asking me or is that rhetorical?
Well, I think what makes a great ad is that it's so interesting and surprising that you would actually share it. I actually just had this conversation with someone yesterday. I was coaching them on how to write better ads for social media. And to me, that's the ultimate litmus test of, is someone just going to like it? Is someone just going to click on it, read it, and be like, oh, interesting? Versus, is it so compelling, so unexpected, right, that someone actually feels compelled to share it? Like, if I saw a Little League team that had, you know, a sports journalism write-up about their most recent game, or it's a photo of a kid, you know, holding the home run ball, whatever, like, I would almost want to share that as, like, here's a really cool example of a Little League team and coach that is, like, taking the experience for those, you know, boys to, like, another level. That's actually so noteworthy that you would want to share it. So in the calculation or in the equation of what's more important, the creativity of the content itself or the budget, it's the creativity of the content itself every single time. You know, that
I think that would have been my answer too. The creativity of, you know, we've been sponsoring youth sports teams since at least the early 80s. Like, I remember I was playing on teams like with title companies and restaurants and all that on the back of my soccer jersey.
Right.
And still today, not one person raises their hand when I ask them that question. We still have people running Yellow Page ads today. Like, those traditional marketing methods are still there, and they're not bad. It's just we're not capitalizing on them or being creative or innovating the way we're doing it to get in front of people to generate a return on that investment. And so I feel like we cracked something. Now, anytime we get the opportunity to sponsor a youth event, I'm all over it, because we have figured out how to actually make it a sponsorship, how to make it an investment, how to make it tangible rather than just a tax write-off because we send a check because we're nice people.
Yeah, I mean, you could, and the thing is, you could put that same amount of money into other advertising, you know, channels, whether it's buying leads from somewhere or sending direct mail postcards, whatever. It's like you could spend that same amount of money elsewhere. And frankly, it's just not as much fun. You are probably going to spend some marketing dollars anyways. You might as well do it in a way that's actually enjoyable and fun for you. Because if it's fun for you, it's probably also going to be a lot more interesting to the public and the community and obviously your eventual customers.
Another question I love to ask audiences is, how many of you have tried to do a Facebook giveaway? And again, all the hands go up. Next question is, how many of you have failed at Facebook giveaways? You just don't get the engagement. The only likes are your mom or your daughter. Like, it doesn't go anywhere. And you sheepishly have to go right click and delete the post because it got zero traction. Well, several years ago, I wanted to do a Facebook giveaway with the goal of engaging, getting new followers on our Facebook page that we could run retargeted ads at for the purpose of open enrollment for health insurance. But we had failed, just like many of the people listening to this podcast, at our Facebook giveaways. And so what we did was, you know, I called up a local pizza parlor in town, locally owned, and said, hey, I want to give away some of your pizzas. I want to promote your Facebook page. Can I have permission to drive as much traffic as I can to you? And of course they said yes. So I drove a couple blocks to the pizza parlor. I walked in, I took a picture of, they have like a taxidermied bear in the corner that everybody in Missoula knows.
Yeah.
Howard's Pizza and the Bear. I took that picture, got back to my office, and right on my phone, I created a graphic that just said Howard's Pizza giveaway, edited the photo, and I posted the picture. Now, here's what you have to do. If you're going to do this, you have to follow directions and pay attention, because Facebook algorithms, we all know, doesn't like your business post. It pushes it down. They want you to pay to play, pay to be seen. So I posted as me personally inside a group. Most communities have something like a Missoula online yard sale where people are just cleaning out their garage and listing their old golf clubs. I went to a group and I posted, hey, we're doing a Facebook giveaway. Here's how it works. You like our page, you like Howard's Pizza's page. I tagged both Howard's Pizza and Glidewell, and you comment below Howard. And over the next 24 hours, it was just hundreds of Howard's, 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 Howard's. And what I realized there, Tim, was in a group, when there's comment and engagement, it boosts that post. It keeps it up on the forefront. So people going to Missoula Online Yard Sales, they're seeing this. Hundreds of comments, hundreds of Howards. Excuse me. So I had to pick our random winner. So what I did was I just started clicking on profiles and looking at profile picture and cover photo. I'm looking for the house with the nice white picket fence, the family with potential teenage drivers, that we want to build a relationship with. I got to one that looked promising, saw their name. So I hopped over to Google and I typed their name in Missoula. And the very first page that came up was a YouTube video from a news anchor about a story about this family that was on the local news. And this family puts on this huge Christmas display, all the lights, serving hot chocolate. The husband, he dresses up as the Grinch, has got a big sled that he sits in and takes photos with kids. Really, really cool story. They talked about in that story how they accept donations to go to the local food bank. Really, really cool. A couple things I thought of as I watched that. One was they gave the address of the home for this family. So I copied that, wrote that down. And then the food bank, I thought, wow, what if we were to partner with these people at some point and we match the donations?
Yeah.
Of every donation given to the food bank, we will match in your name. So all we need to do is create a form there where people can write down, here's my name for the matching donation. Here's my email for the receipt. And here's the amount I gave. Well, we can match that, but then we can also take their name and email and put them into our CRM with the drip campaign highlighted around Christmas and the Grinch. Great idea. I took the address and I popped it into Zillow. And when I saw that that home, the Zestimate was $926,000, I thought, there we go. We have a random winner for the pizza giveaway. So I went back to our Facebook page and I posted on our Facebook page, congratulations, tag the winner. You've won two large pizzas from Howard's. Tag them. Share us a private message with your address, your phone number, your order, preferred delivery time. We'll make it happen. Little did they know I had most of that information from the news story. Then I screenshot that post and I went and posted that at the bottom of all the Howard comments in the group, letting everybody know that we followed through. We actually did what we said we were going to do with our winner. I could have easily in that moment let Howard's Pizza deliver the pizza that night. I chose to go to Howard's Pizza, pick up the pizza, take a selfie of me in front of Howard's Pizza with the pizza, almost doing the Domino's effect, letting the people see the process, where we are in the delivery. When I got to the house of the winner, I knocked on the door, met them face to face, shook their hands, thanked them for participating. And on the top of the pizza box, on a Glidewell note card, said, one, enjoy your Howard's Pizza. Two, take a picture of Howard's Pizza. Three, post the picture on Facebook and tag Glidewell and Howard's Pizza. Four, if you complete steps 1 through 3, I will mail you a $25 gift card to Starbucks next week. Because who doesn't like overpriced burnt coffee? That night, I sent a text to the winner, said, hey, good evening. Hope your family enjoyed your pizza. Please let me know if there's anything more I can do to ever serve you. Have an awesome weekend. I woke up that morning to a picture of me and Glidewell and Howard's Pizza tag of this family sitting around the dinner table eating pizza. So I put a note card in the mail, just said, hey, thank you so much for the picture of your family. Looked like you enjoyed the pizza. Enjoy your favorite cup of coffee on me. Guess who now insures the winner of that contest? Guess who insures Howard's Pizza? Guess who insures the general manager of Howard's Pizza's home and auto and rental properties? We generated $4,600 in revenue from a $20 pizza giveaway. And that was not the goal. The goal of this was to increase the followers on our Facebook page for retargeted ads.
Right.
In that 24 hours, Tim, we had 354 new organic followers in our community, where we were able to then run those retargeted ads for open enrollment. And from those 354 followers and a $20 pizza, we generated $58,000 in first year revenue on health insurance, putting our total at just shy of $63,000 in revenue because we did a Facebook pizza giveaway in an online yard sale group.
Now, again, I want to highlight that you brought in that much revenue for your local, you know, your local insurance agency without spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on Facebook ads, right? It's that rather than throwing money at it, what you did instead was you did something really interesting and creative in real life. And then you allowed how creative it was to kind of like go organic, you know, go viral organically on Facebook in your immediate community. And that kind of was a substitute for just throwing money at it, right? Like actually do something interesting in real life, you know?
We've gone full circle here, Tim. That is a different approach to building business relationships. You have to, the different piece is the creativity. It's we hear all the time, you got to think outside the box. No, I truly believe we need to get back to thinking inside the box. These basic marketing principles have worked for decades. What we need to start doing is marketing outside of the box. The ideas and strategies, the foundation is built. We got to use our creativity and our relationships and our quirks, the things that makes us unique. You know, my biggest advice to business people is don't compare your beginning to somebody else's middle. Be you. Grow, learn, develop, create. I shared with you two successful stories. we could do a whole day of podcasts of the unsuccessful stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
The difference in how you build business relationships starts with being creative. Keep doing what you're doing, but just look for those pivot moments where you can just hinge and just make a slight change that changes the trajectory of your life, your business, your family, your career.
So. It's better to do fewer marketing campaigns, but have the ones that you do be exceptionally creative and interesting, where you're doing interesting things in real life, than just constantly putting mediocre template copy and paste crap out there and then throwing money at it by sponsoring a bunch of Facebook ads. Like, do interesting things in real life, and your social media engagement will honestly take care of itself.
100%. Do what you do so well that people want to bring their friends and family. They want to see it again.
Brandon, this was awesome. I'll have to have you on again, because I know there's a lot more that we can talk about. But guys, thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Platform Marketing Show. We'll see you on the next one. Thanks, Brandon.